Opening her table napkin, Aunt Lynn asked, "Have you had a busy day, dear?" This was a sentence that made sense but had no meaning. It was as much an overture to dinner as the spreading of her napkin. She expected no answer. Or rather, being unaware she had asked the question, she didn't listen to his answer. Robert looked at her with a more conscious benevolence than usual. After the uncharted challenges at the franchise, the serenity of Aunt Lynn's presence was very comforting. Well-being and contentment enveloped her like a cloak. "What kept you so late?" she asked. From long experience, Robert recognized this as being in a different category from "Have you had a busy day?" "I had to go out to the franchise, that house on the Loughborough Road. They wanted some legal advice."
"Those odd people. Hope they pay you. The father drank himself to death. Left them without a penny, poor things. Old Mrs. Sharp ran a boarding house in London to make ends meet. They were just going to be turned into the street when the old man at the franchise died. So providential."
"Aunt Lynn, where do you get those stories?"
"But it's true, dear. I forget who told me. Someone who had stayed in the same street in London. It was first-hand, anyhow." "Did they have a maid, by the way?" "No." "Well, I'm not surprised. They starved the last one."
Robert was suddenly tired and depressed. If kind, silly Aunt Lynn saw no harm in repeating absurd stories, what would the real gossips of Milford achieve with real scandal? It was more than a week later that Mr. Heseltine put his head round Robert's door to say that Inspector Hallam would like to see him. He braced himself for whatever Hallam was going to say, but what emerged was that Scotland Yard had let them understand that no proceedings would be taken on the present evidence. Blair noticed the present evidence.
"I take it that they lack corroborative evidence."
"Yes," Hallam said. "They couldn't trace the lorry driver who gave her the lift. That wouldn't surprise them."
"No. No driver is going to risk the sack by confessing he gave anyone a lift, especially a girl. Transport bosses are strict about that. They needed that lorry driver, or someone like him."
"Yes," Robert said. "What did you make of her, Hallam?"
"The girl? Oh, I don't know. Nice kid. Seemed quite genuine. Might have been one of my own."
This, Blair realized, was a very good sample of what they would be up against if it ever came to a case. The decent school coat, the unmade-up young face, the wide-set, candid eyes. It was a prosecution counsel's dream of a victim.
"So you don't judge people by the colour of their eyes," Robert said.
"No, don't I," said Hallam, surprisingly.
"There's a particular shade of baby blue that condemns a man, as far as I'm concerned, before he's opened his mouth. Plausible lies, every one of them. Given to murder, too, come to think of it."
"You alarm me," Robert said. "In future, I shall give baby blue eyes a wide berth. Anyway, thank you for coming to tell me. I must let the Sharps know at once." As Hallam took his leave, Robert lifted the telephone receiver. But there was no answer. The Sharps were not at home. While he was still thus engaged, Robert's junior partner, Neville Bennett, strolled in, clad in his usual outrageous tweed, a pinkish shirt, and a purple tie. Robert wondered for the 100th time what was going to become of Blair, Haywood and Bennett when it at last slipped into the hands of this young sprig of the Bennets.
"I thought I would run into Loughborough this afternoon, if you haven't anything you want me to do," Neville said.
"Can't you talk to her on the telephone?" Robert asked. Neville was engaged to the Bishop of Loughborough's third daughter.
"Oh, it isn't Rosemary. She's in London for a week. It's a film."
"What film?"
"A French film in Loughborough."
"Well, do you think you could pause long enough to drop a note into the franchise as you go by?"
"I might. I always wanted to see what was inside that wall. Who lives there now?"
"An old woman and her daughter."
"Daughter?"
repeated Neville, automatically pricking his ears. "Middle-aged daughter."
"Oh, all right. I'll just get my coat."
He returned with a dreadful Raglan affair over his arm, snatched up the note Robert had written, and disappeared with a,
"Tell Aunt Lynn I may be late. She asked me over to dinner."
Half an hour later, Robert walked over to the Rose and Crown to meet a client. The client wasn't there yet, but Ben Carley was. He lifted a nicotine-stained finger.
"I saw your car outside the franchise the other day."
"Yes," said Robert, and wondered a little. It was unlike Ben Carley to be blunt.
Is the rumour true?
Rumour?
Are they witches?
Are they supposed to be? Asked Robert lightly.
There's strong support for the belief in the countryside, I understand.
Robert understood that Carley was offering him tacitly information that he thought ought to be useful to him, and said,
"Oh, well, since entertainment came into the country with the cinema, God bless it, an end has been put to witch-hunting." "Don't you believe it. Give these Midland morons a good excuse and they'll witch-hunt with the best. An inbred crowd of degenerates, if you ask me. Well, I'll be seeing you."
As soon as the business with his client was over, Robert made straight for the telephone. It was Marion who answered, and her voice sounded warm and glad. You can't imagine what a relief your note was. Perhaps she would suggest his coming out for a sherry before dinner. What a charming nephew you have, by the way.
Nephew?
The one who brought the note.
He is not my nephew, Robert said coldly. He is my first cousin, once removed, but I'm glad you liked him.
He would have to take the bull by the horns.
I should like to see you sometime to discuss what we can do to straighten things out.
He waited.
Of course. Perhaps we could look in at your office. How would it do if we came on Friday morning? That is our weekly shopping day.
Friday, Robert said, swallowing down his disappointment.
About noon?
Yes, that would do very well. Goodbye, and thank you again for your support and help. She rang off, firmly and cleanly. Without all the usual preliminary twitterings Robert had come to expect from women. He set off on his normal evening walk down the high street, trying hard not to feel snubbed. He had not been anxious to go to the franchise in the first instance, and had made his reluctance pretty plain. She was quite naturally avoiding a repetition of the circumstances.
Ah, well, he thought,
flinging himself down in his favourite chair in the sitting room and opening the evening paper. When they came to the office on Friday, he could do something to put the affair on a more personal basis. The quiet of the old house soothed him. There was a letter from his only sister, who in the war had fallen in love with a Canadian and was now raising 5 blonde brats in Saskatchewan. "Come out soon, Robin dear," her letter finished, "before the brats grow up and before the moss grows right round you. You know how bad Aunt Lynn is for you." She and Aunt Lynn had never seen eye to eye. He was smiling, relaxed and reminiscent, when his peace was shattered by the eruption of Neville.
"Why didn't you tell me she was like that?" Neville demanded.
"Who?"
"The sharp woman. Why didn't you tell me?"
"I thought she slept in the afternoons."
"I don't believe she ever sleeps. She doesn't belong to the human family at all. She is all compact of fire and metal."
"I know she's a very rude old woman, but you have to make allowances."
"Old? Who are you talking about?"
"Old Mrs. Sharp, of course."
"Oh, I didn't see old Mrs. Sharp. I'm talking about Marion."
"Marion Sharp? How did you know her name was Marion?"
"She told me. It suits her, doesn't it? She couldn't be anything but Marion."
"You seem to have become remarkably intimate for a doorstep acquaintance."
"Oh, she gave me tea."
"Tea? I thought you were in a desperate hurry to see a French film."
"I'm never in a desperate hurry to do anything when a woman like Marion Sharp invites me to tea. Have you noticed her eyes, that wonderful shading of grey into hazel, and her eyebrows, winged eyebrows? I made a poem about them on the way home. Do you want to hear it?"
"No," said Robert firmly. "Did you enjoy your film?"
"Oh, I didn't go."
"You didn't go?"
"I told you, I had tea with Marion instead."
"You mean you've been at the franchise the whole afternoon?"
"I suppose I have,"
Neville said dreamily. "What happened to your thirst for French cinema?"
"But Marion is French cinema. Even you must see that."
Robert winced at the "even you."
"Why bother with the shadow when you can be with the reality? That's her great quality, isn't it? I've never met anyone as real as Marion."
"Not even Rosemary?" Robert was in the state known to Aunt Lynn as put out.
"Oh, Rosemary is a darling and I'm going to marry her, but that's quite different."
"Is it?" said Robert with deceptive meekness.
"Of course, people don't marry women like Marion Sharp any more than they marry winds and clouds, any more than they marry Joan of Arc. She spoke very nicely of you, by the way.
And that was kind of her. The tone was so dry, even Neville caught the flavour of it. "Don't you like her?" he asked, looking at his cousin in surprised disbelief. Robert was a tired man who hadn't had his dinner and was suffering from the memory of a frustration and a snubbing. "As far as I'm concerned," he said, "Marion Sharp is a skinny woman of 40 who lives with a rude old mother in an ugly old house and needs legal advice." But even as the words came out, he wanted to stop them, as if they were a betrayal of a friend. "Probably she isn't your cup of tea," Neville said tolerantly. "You've always preferred them a little stupid and blonde, haven't you?" This was said without malice, just stating a fact. "I can't imagine why you should think that." "All the women you nearly married were that type." "I have never nearly married anyone," Robert said stiffly. "That's what you think. You'll never know how nearly Molly Manders landed you."
"Molly Manders?"
Aunt Lynn said, coming in, flushed from her cooking and bearing the tray with the sherry.
"Such a silly girl, always looking at herself in that little pocket mirror of hers."
"Aunt Lynn saved you that time, didn't you, Aunt Lynn?"
"I don't know what you're talking about, Neville, dear. Do stop prancing about on the hearth rug and put a log on the fire. Did you like your French film?"
"I didn't go. I had tea at the franchise instead." He shot a glance at Robert, having learned by now that there was more in Robert's reaction than met the eye.
"With those strange people?"
Aunt Lynn turned to Robert, as to terra firma.
"Had I better call, dear, if you're going to know them, or ask the vicar's wife to call?"
"I don't think I would commit the vicar's wife to anything so irrevocable," Robert said dryly.
"I don't think I will call, if it's all the same to you, dear. Apart from being strangers and very odd, they frankly terrify me."
"Yes." That was a sample of the reaction he might expect where the Sharps were concerned. Ben Carley had gone out of his way today to let him know that if there was trouble at the franchise, he wouldn't be able to count on an unprejudiced jury. He must take measures for his protection of the Sharps. When he saw them on Friday, he would suggest a private investigator. One man working at his leisure on a trail might be more successful than the official police investigation had been.